Om Shanti, good morning. Today we have Sister Shilu, one of the senior lecturers from the headquarters here. She has been in contact with Raj Yoga from the time she was 10 years old, as her mother was a Brahma Kumari. She's from Bombay, and she went on to continue her studies and has a degree in science. Sister Shilu came to the headquarters at an early stage, especially to look after the double foreigners when they started coming to the headquarters. Not so many people were fluent in English, so it was only those who were fluent in English who we could interact. I mentioned that Brother Niver was also looking after the double foreigners and Sister Shilu as well. She was instrumental in starting the global office, which provides facilities when the BKs from foreign countries come to Mount Abu. Sister Shilu has traveled extensively within India, outside India, and you'll find that she's very clear in her explanations, very sequential, and she also makes her lectures very interesting with lots of anecdotes and stories that you can relate to. Sister Shilu also recorded commentaries in Hindi, just as I was mentioning Sister Denise had done them in English. Sister Shilu has recorded many commentaries in Hindi which are used widely within India. So I leave you to listen to Sister Shilu. Thank you.
Om Shanti. I hope all of you are enjoying in your retreat. All of you are enjoying very much. Are you? Yes, you can wave if you are. Very good. And how soon these days passed, and tomorrow you will be leaving. I have been given a very interesting subject to speak on. The law of sow and reap, which in scientific terms we call it as the law of cause and effect, or the law of action and reaction. And a very, very basic theory, the main principle in science is that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Every cause has an effect, and that effect becomes a cause for another effect, or the reaction becomes an action for another reaction, and so on and so forth, and this becomes a cycle. Every cause leading to an effect, and every effect becoming a cause for another effect. And in spiritual terms, we can call it in the form of a very beautiful saying, as you sow, so shall you reap. My present is based on my past, and my present will lead to my future. So my past has resulted in this present, and this present will lead to my future. So the law of sow and reap, if you sow a mango seed, you can't expect an orange tree. You will get a mango tree and a mango fruit. So whatever you sow, you reap accordingly. And if we understand this on a very, very deep and unlimited spiritual level. So many of our questions in life can be solved or answered on this basis. That whatever I'm experiencing today is definitely based on my past actions. Nothing comes without any cause. Whatever is the effect now is because of a cause in the past. This world is called the field of action. And in this field of action, whatever seed of action we sow, we reap the fruit accordingly. To understand this in simple terms, it can be said, whatever you do, you get that back. If you give sorrow to someone, you cannot expect happiness. You will definitely get sorrow. If you give happiness, you will receive happiness. Whatever you give, that you get back. Now this can be very easy to understand in simple words. But then, it is said to be the law of karma. And they say that the law of karma, which in simple word, the meaning of karma is action. But then this law of karma is so deep. And it is said that an ordinary layman cannot understand it very easily. Actually, it should not be difficult to understand this law. As you sow, so shall you reap. It's so simple to understand because if you give sorrow, you get back sorrow. It's so simple to understand. But still, it's not so simple. Why? Because between the seed and the fruit, there is such a big gap. And so many things are involved in that. Till we get the fruit. It's not that you sow and you get the fruit. Each seed is different. And for each seed to be sown, you need a different type of land. You need different amount of water. You need a different season. There's a different duration. Everything is so different. So between the seed and the tree, there are so many other things also to be taken care of until we get the fruit. For example, you sow a seed, but then before you sow the seed, you have to make sure that the field has been plowed enough. It's a fertile soil. If it's a barren land, stony, rocky land, and you put a seed in it, will it bear fruit? Definitely not. And therefore that land has first to be plowed. Manure has to be put in it. You know, it has to be made a little bit, at least fertile to some extent. Only then that land will become worthy enough to give the fruit. So the land has to be plowed first. So there's the importance of the seed, but there's also importance of the field, the land in which you sow the seed. But then is that enough again? If you sow the seed, okay, the land is fertile, but then you have to keep on watering that seed too. If you don't water the seed and just leave the seed as it is, what will happen? Will that seed sprout? Will it bear the tree? Definitely not. So it has to be watered too, continuously. And okay, even if you water it, but then is that enough again? Because once the shoots come up, the little leaves, the cotyledons, as we learn in botany, these technical botanical words, they come. They need some protection too. Because those little soft leaves, they could be eaten up by insects, by birds, by animals. So there's need of protection, you know. They put a net, or they cover it with a net so that no animals touch it, no birds come over and eat those leaves. So protection is necessary too. But then after that again, we need a lot more care to make sure that it is resulting into a fruit. And then once the fruits start coming, again, depends on what type of seed it is, because all fruits are not coming all year round. Some are seasonal plants, seasonal trees, seasonal fruits. So they give fruit only in season, not all year round. And some seeds do give fruit, but some give fruit immediately, very soon. Flowers, you sow the seed and you get flowers so quickly. But some fruit trees, they don't bear fruit very quickly, they take a lot of time. But then, there are also such trees where the fruits come out only once and that's all, you have to sow again. And then there are some seeds that once you sow and they do take long to get the fruit, to give the fruit, but then once they start giving fruit, they keep on giving whole year and they become like perennial. We call them annual, perennial, seasonal. They're all different names we give. Like the coconut tree. All year round you can get coconuts, but then it takes so long for the fruit to arrive. And therefore, between the seed and the fruit, so much of, so many things happening. Okay, once the fruit has come, again the fruit needs that protection as well. Because if we pluck it raw, it's not going to really be worthwhile, because the raw fruit can be very bitter, can be very hard to break. And if you just break it, pluck it, and you can't even eat it, so you have to throw it away. So you need to allow that fruit to ripen on the tree. You know, patience is necessary, and therefore there's a very beautiful saying, patience bears sweet fruit. Time is a very big healer. So patience is again necessary to allow that fruit to ripen on the tree. If it ripens on the tree, it becomes very sweet. And then, once the fruit is ready, eat it. Who's stopping you? It is your tree, your fruits. You have worked hard on it. So, most welcome, eat it. But we know many people, they have lots of fruit at home, but then they are rotting in the fridge. People don't have time to eat. Neither do they have time to eat, nor do they have time to share with anyone else. And they just rot in the fridge. And after 8 days, maybe you open the fridge, all the fruits have rotten away. Because you had no time to open the fruit. You were away or something, whatever. So, eat the fruit and share with others. And then more beautiful than that, you get the fruit, take the seed and sow again. You know, in Hindi there's a very beautiful saying for mango fruit. And they say, aam ke aam, gutli ke bhi dam. Aam is the fruit and the gutli, the big seed inside. So that's also very precious, because you eat the fruit and then sow the seed again. And when you sow the seed, what happens? You get the fruit tree again. So not only is the fruit tasty, the mango is considered to be, you know, the king of all fruits, but then the seed is also so big and it can sow it again and you'll get another tree. So not only the fruit is valuable, but even the seed is valuable. And therefore we say that actions are also like that. Between the action and the result or the fruit of action, there are such a big gap. And all these things have also to be seen. Somebody may say, I don't give sorrow to anyone. then why do people give me sorrow? Because this is action and reaction. If I give sorrow, I will reap sorrow. But some people say, I don't give sorrow to anyone. Then why do people give me sorrow? Isn't this the question of many? I look at myself and I say, I don't give sorrow to anyone. I try to give happiness to everyone. I let go things, you know. I'm very peaceful, very loving, very helpful. I have all these qualities. I try to do my best. But then why at every step people are giving me sorrow? Because law of karma says what you give, that you get back. So I don't give sorrow, then why do I get sorrow? Now here I have to understand two things. First thing is that, why do you take sorrow? Nobody can give it to you forcibly. Even a small child, if you want to feed your child, and your child doesn't want to be fed, doesn't want to eat anything, and even if you force it, eat, open the child's mouth and force the food, but the child doesn't want to eat, then can you force him? He'll throw out, and throw out the food. He will not eat. Doesn't want to eat. So too, you cannot force anyone and give him something by force. It's up to him to take it or not take it. It's a very beautiful story on this. Sister Bharti was saying, I'm very famous for telling stories. And the story goes of Mahatma Buddha. I don't know if you know it, if you've heard of it. Mahatma Buddha, he went to one village and there was one person who was very much against him, very much against him. He used to abuse him a lot. And when he went there, people told him, don't go there, that person is very bad, he's very abusive. You know, he will insult you. He said, it doesn't matter. There are many stories about Angulimal also, all that. But then this story is that when he went there, that person came and started abusing him like anything. But Mahatma Buddha was undisturbed. He did not reply, he did not react. And after maybe half an hour of insults, he kept quiet. How long could he go on insulting? He maybe lost his words, you know, what more to say? And after that, Mahatma Buddha very peacefully, very silently, in a whisper, very sweetly told him, let me ask you a question. If someone tries to give something to someone, but the other one doesn't take it, then with whom will that thing remain? So simple. And immediately that person felt so ashamed, that he just fell at his feet and said, please forgive me, I didn't know that you were so great. I didn't know. Now I realize you are very great. Please forgive me. So you can understand that this is the meaning of greatness. So if somebody is trying to give you sorrow by insulting you, abusing you, whatever, you're not forced to take that sorrow. Because sorrow is also in the mind. It's all in the mind, they say. As you think, so do you become. And this is what meditation helps us. We create the self-respect in us. Who am I? And whose am I? What am I? Why am I? You know? All these spiritual questions I answer to myself, and this uplifts my self-respect. It boosts my self-respect. The big difference between self-respect and ego. Ego is hurt very quickly. Ego is like a glass house, you know? A glass is all made of glass. Any stone, it can break that glass. But ego can result in feeling that insult of somebody easily because I have that ego. And if somebody tells me something against it, immediately I'm hurt. But if I have my self-respect, which means I know who I am. I'm a peaceful soul. I'm a loving soul. I'm a blissful soul. I'm a pure soul. This is the consciousness I keep for meditation. We have to keep this consciousness. And I'm the child of the Supreme, the Highest on High Almighty. So if I am that elevated, then even if somebody insults me, what does it matter? That soul doesn't know who I am. Doesn't matter. It's like, you know, a mad person, a drunk person, supposing he's walking on the street. He's drunk. He's a little bit insane. And he starts shouting at you. Hey, you know. So what do you do at that time? And you know he's not mentally fit. So what do you do at that time? Do you get angry with him? Do you feel hurt? What do you feel? You feel sorry, don't you? What do you feel at that moment? You feel sorry for that person, poor thing, doesn't matter. So why you feel sorry and not hurt or angry? Because in your consciousness is that this person is not in his true state. His state of mind is not very good at this time, therefore you feel sorry. So because I feel sorry and I don't feel hurt, I don't take the sorrow, no? So, do I have to take the sorrow forcibly? No, I don't have to. Nobody can forcibly give me sorrow. So if somebody says, I don't give sorrow to anyone, but why do people give me sorrow? The answer, simple answer is, why do you take it? No one can forcibly give it to you. It's all in your mind. And then you may say, but then that person is telling everyone that I'm giving him sorrow, I'm giving him sorrow. Then we say, now go back to that person. It is his karma that is actually giving him his sorrow, not your karma. See, I did not give sorrow, so I cannot get it back. But if he is feeling that I'm giving him sorrow and therefore he or she is giving me sorrow, but if he is feeling sorrow, it's not because I have given him sorrow, but it is because his karma as such that he is feeling the sorrow himself. That's why he's trying to give me sorrow. So he is experiencing sorrow because of his own karma. It could be because of his, you know, his own guilt. It could be because of his own imagination. It could be because of his own doubts, you know, the doubts, imagination, own guilt, you know, all these things, these factors come and they lead to the sorrow within. Suspicion, doubts, imaginations, you know, all these things, they are such subtle mental weaknesses of a person. And when they start coming in the mind, that person will definitely experience sorrow. And then he won't blame himself. This is a very, it's really ironical that people, even if it is their fault, they hardly want to accept it is their fault because of their ego. They think others are responsible for their sorrow, you know. It's so easy to point out mistake of others. You like this, you like that. But indirectly at that time, three fingers are pointing towards whom? Towards me. So, okay, that person may be at fault, but only one-fourth, but three-fourth is my fault. I have to change. I can't expect the other one to change. I can't force him to change. I can't force him to accept what I want to give him. But I have to change. I definitely have my own mastery. I can change myself. And therefore, if somebody thinks that I'm giving sorrow, but I am not giving sorrow, then if he is feeling sorrow and trying to give the sorrow to me, don't take it. And if he is feeling the sorrow, then have mercy on him. Feel sorry for him, that it is his own karma which is leading to his sorrow, not your karma. And therefore you will feel the relief, because you are very clean at heart. Now this is one aspect of understanding the law of karma. The second aspect of understanding the law of karma is that very many people say that I don't speak lies. I never speak lies. I'm very truthful. But if someone speaks lies, I don't like it. You know, why does he speak lies in front of me? Doesn't he know who I am? Now what is working here? My ego is working here. Doesn't he know who I am? He's speaking lies in front of me. Well, if he's speaking lies in front of you and you are someone, maybe a big person, whatever, but that's my ego working. So if he's speaking lies and I'm getting angry with that person, and I may say, but I got angry with him because he spoke lies. Well, he spoke lies, his karma. But why do you get angry? If he spoke lies, his karma, no? But why do you get angry with him? Even you are creating karma by getting angry with that person. Could be that you are responsible for making him speak lies. You know, not to stick it this way. Supposing at home your child is a very small baby, small child, and he or she, the child breaks a glass. Okay, he breaks it. And the mother goes, did you break this glass? Did you break this vase? And the hand is above the head, you know, just ready to beat. Did you break it? Now what will the child do? Eh? Will the child say, yes, mommy, I broke. Yes, daddy, I broke. Immediately the child will say, no, because it wants to be saved. It doesn't want that beating. So, who was responsible for making the child speak lies? If the mother would have said it with love, child, tell me, did you break? You're a very sweet child. I know you speak the truth. Just let me know. I won't do anything. The child will definitely speak the truth. So who was responsible for making the child tell lies? The mother. And very often it is seen, you know, between mommy and daddy, mother is, she's very harsh with her children, with her son or child, you know, very strict. But father is very loving, you know, usually it's the opposite. Mother is loving, father is harsh. Sometimes mother is harsh, father is loving. So the child now is feeling guilty. Definitely that child spoke lies. So the child will go to the father and tell in the ear, daddy, I broke, but don't tell mommy. Don't tell mommy, because mommy will beat me. Now see, who's responsible? So if I say, why did he tell lies? But I am responsible for making him tell lies. I forget that. Children need love. Children don't need beating. They don't need harsh words. They need love. Every soul needs love. Even elderly people need love, because every soul is an embodiment of love. So when we practice meditation, we create that consciousness. I am an embodiment of love. So definitely with love we are able to deal with others. You know, once somebody asked Dadi Prakashmani, who was the chief of this organization, she left her body in 2007. So somebody asked her, shouldn't we keep a balance between love and law? Sometimes law and sometimes love. You know what Dadi said? Love is the law. Love is the law, not balance between love and law. Love is the law. Because what you can achieve through love, you can't achieve through law. Well, I don't know how you will accept this. Because every soul is an embodiment of love. So, a child is an embodiment of love. It needs love. In the earlier days it used to be said, spare the rod and spoil the child. That used to be the saying. But these days, just one, spare the rod. The other part of the sentence is not spoken anymore, because if you use the stick, you will be penalized. You can't use the stick in school, can you? Can you beat your children? They can go and complain against you. Even nowadays, children complain against their parents, that their parents are beating them. Nowadays, everything, at least in India, this law is coming up. It must be, I don't know what in the Middle East, how it is, but then it's very true. But then on a spiritual aspect, supposing someone says that he's speaking lies, we say, spiritually, we are all speaking lies. You know, why people get upset when somebody is speaking lies? Because it's a sin. Why should you not speak lies? Because it's a sin. Now, spiritually, we are all speaking lies. So we are committing so many sins. You know how we are speaking lies spiritually? Who am I? Who are you? Who are you? A soul. So if you are a soul, but you forget that you are a soul, and you become body conscious, and you say, I am this, I am that, in a body conscious state, isn't it a lie? I am Mr. So-and-so, I am this, I am that, whole day from morning till night, I, you know, with that egoistic state. As many times I am saying I with ego, I am committing a sin. It's a sinful action. And what will be the fruit of that action? It's sowing a seed of a sinful action by saying I with ego. And the fruit of that will be sorrow. Definitely. Because my ego will be hurt instantly. And when that ego is hurt, I feel the sorrow. It's the fruit of my own karma. And therefore, through meditation, we learn how to create the self-respect, and therefore we don't take the sorrow. So how many times we are speaking lies, and why do we get upset when others speak lies? Spiritually, even I'm speaking lies every moment. Okay, somebody may say, yes, speaking, I understand this, I'm a soul, but then sometimes I do forget. But then if somebody steals something, I get very upset or takes something without asking. It is stealing, because stealing means taking something without asking permission from the owner. That is stealing. Well, somebody may say, I don't like if somebody takes without asking me. Why didn't they ask me? It was stealing. I said, okay, it is, why you get upset when somebody takes without asking, you call it stealing? Because it belongs to me. It belongs to me, I am the owner, and I am attached to it, and somebody takes it away without asking. At least he should have asked me, can I take? That is respect, that is manners, you know, we say all these things. Okay, he took it and I got upset. And I say it was mine. And he took without asking me. Okay, spiritually, is anything mine? When the soul came in this body, even this body, first of all, didn't belong to me. I didn't have this body. I entered this body, got this body, okay. Then I got possessions. Before, when I was born, I didn't have any possessions. Naked, you know, the child is born naked. Okay, I gathered many things, took many possessions. I have everything now, much more than I need. You know, there's a saying, needs are not many. We don't need many things. But wants can be unlimited. I want. That is why there's a very beautiful saying that there's everything for one's need. Mother Earth has provided everything for our needs, but there is nothing not for our greed. So if wants are there, then they are unlimited. And we gather things, unlimited of them, and when we really don't know where they are in time of need, we don't even know where we have kept those things. We keep searching for them. So what's the use of having something and not being available when you really need it? Because you don't know where you have kept it. You have so many, you know. But at the time of need, it's no more found. And also if we go to see that when a person dies, does he really take anything with him? We gather things so much we gather as if we are going to live for hundreds of years. And we don't even know what's going to happen the next moment. How long we are going to live in this body, we don't know. Such is the state of this world today. Every day we hear of news, every day of this happening, that happening, you know, so many people dying, this, that, planes crashing, every day we are hearing. You are good, you are not, no more in having any news of what's happening in this world. Did you read the newspaper? Did you watch the television these past four days? So you are in heaven already. Because in heaven such things don't happen, and no news is good news. So what happens every day? Plane crashes every day, wars happening every day, this happening, terrorist attacks happening every day, so much. You open the newspaper, the headlines are all these things. Scams happening every day, corruption, adulteration, rapes, what not? This is Kali Yuga, what we say. But you are in a heavenly world and sitting here, good, no news is good news. But then what I'm saying is that supposing somebody takes, and I get so upset, why did he take mine? So if he asks, is if you say mine, the amount of times you say my, you are committing that many sinful actions. Because attachment to anything will lead to a sinful action. So anger will lead to a sinful action. The ego results in anger. Then ego results in attachment. So just as many times you say I, in the body conscious stage you are committing sinful action. Similarly, as many times I say my, I am committing sinful actions. So I should ask myself from morning till night, how many sinful actions I commit? The amount of times I say I and my in a body conscious state. Possessiveness and ego will lead to sinful action, and that will definitely give me sorrow. Because if I'm attached to anything and the moment I lose it, the sorrow is experienced instantly. You know, it's very interesting, sometimes we give this example. You go on the street and somebody says, oh, my pocket has been picked. You know? My pocket is picked, somebody picked my pocket, my mobile is lost, this, that, and I start searching mine. I hope mine is intact, no? Mm-hmm. Mine is not lost, okay, his is lost, doesn't matter, because it doesn't belong to me. So if something belongs to me and it is lost, how upset I get. But if it belongs to somebody else and it gets lost, I'm not that upset, no, am I? Am I that upset if it's of somebody else's which is lost? Well, it wasn't mine. So, I and mine, these are two doorways to hell, we say. It can lead to so much of sorrow. The third thing, very important, you know, it is said committing suicide, murder, all these are big sinful actions because they are such big crimes. Even committing suicide is definitely a crime. I'm killing my own self. Just imagine God's beautiful life which God has given to me. It's like, insulting God if I'm finishing this life. And if I kill someone, I have no right. Even a mother has no right to kill her own child. A mother may say, well, I have given birth to my child and if I kill it, so what? I have given birth. But no, you can't. You will be called a killer. You won't be called a mother or a father, whatever. So even a mother doesn't have rights. So I have no right to kill. And therefore, you know, Buddha said, Mahavir said, live and let live. Live and let live. But a higher aspect than live and let live is even greater. The higher aspect than that is live for others. If you live for yourself, what great is it? You know, I'm living only for myself. just living to satisfy my senses, just my physical pleasures I'm having, and that's why I'm happy. But if I'm living only for myself, I'm not doing something great. Live for others. A little below that will be live and let live. You live and let others live. But the worst would be, I don't want to live and I don't want that one also to live. You know what some people do? They take a gun, shoo, 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 and then kill the self. Kill many and then kill the self. What is a human bomb? A human bomb kills many, but even that one doesn't survive, no human bomb, because he has made his whole body into a bomb. So kill and kill yourself, kill others and kill yourself. Well, if you wanted to kill yourself, well, you could have killed yourself. Why did you want others to be killed? You don't want to live, but why you want to kill others and kill yourself? This is happening in today's world. You can understand how much sin one is committing through that. Well, this is definitely a very big sinful action, but then spiritually if you go to say, you may say, I don't think of killing myself or killing anyone. I have never given sorrow to anyone, never even, you know, touched someone's throat like that or tried to threaten. No, never, never. I'm a very peace-loving person. Okay, you may be. But then spiritually we say, you are killing your own soul sometimes, you know. Have you ever thought of that? How you are killing your own soul? Well, a soul never dies. But how do we kill our own soul? On the first day you must have heard, what is a soul? A soul is mind, intellect and sanskars, resolves. Now in the mind, the thoughts come. Then the intellect guides the mind. The intellect is like a filter, which is guiding the mind what to think and what not to think, you know. If you are thinking what is not right, immediately you feel guilty and you say, I shouldn't think that, you know, it's not right to think that, because the intellect is guiding you. So sometimes what happens, we go against the intellect. That inner conscience which is guiding me, we kill that conscience. And then we do feel guilty conscious too, because we are trying to kill our own conscience. Then afterwards we just give up and we just do things against our conscience. And the result is we are killing our own soul. We are not killing anybody else. But killing our own soul by accepting that guilty conscious feeling, leading to fear. When, you know, whenever you do anything wrong, immediately your own soul will tell you this is wrong. This is wrong. You should not do it. Because the soul in its original nature is very pure. Very pure. Just like I have white clothes on. They're so clean. But if there's one, you know, little speck of dirt or anything, dirty thing, yeah, I'll feel so bad. Oh, why this? Somebody may say, sister, doesn't matter. The whole thing is white. The little is enough. It doesn't matter if it's there. This dirt or this speck of ink or whatever, any stain. But why the little stain also? The whole thing is so white. Why the little stain? Why should that appear? Because if it is there, okay, I may say never mind, but 10 people will point out that stain. Sister, there's a stain on your sari. There's a stain. They won't see that white thing. 99% white and just 1% stain. They will see that 1% stain only. Because it's very true, this is a mental attitude of everyone. That the negative is seen very quickly. Positive is hardly seen. I remember in our school we used to study psychology. So the psychology teacher was teaching psychology. She brought a big piece of paper in front of us and put a little black spot of stain, of ink spot in the middle. Now that ink spot was hardly 1% on that whole paper. So it was just 1% and 99% was white paper. And she asked a vague question, what is this? You can imagine 99% said that it's a stain of ink. And only 1% said it's a white paper. And the stain of ink was only on 1% of paper. The rest was all white paper. So the eyes of 99% went on that 1% stain. And only 1% eyes went on the white paper. So this is like a natural habit of people that they will see my defects very quickly. They hardly see my good points. And those defects are spoken more. The good points are also spoken. But then the negative points are spoken more. Because that becomes news, you know. Good things hardly become news. In the media, they say, what is news? Only the bad news is news. Good news is never news. It's hardly exposed. And the bad news is exposed like anything. And if there is no bad news at the beginning, on the front page of any newspaper, they say, oh, today not much news. Because no bad news. So what I'm trying to say is that internally, how by suppressing our conscience, by feeling guilty and then just giving up that guilt also, and just doing anything against the soul, this is like killing the soul. So I may not be killing the body, but I'm killing my soul. And how much sorrow I'm giving to myself? I may not be giving sorrow to anyone else. But even if I'm giving sorrow to myself, even that is a sinful action. So how much sorrow we give to the self? Don't we? And then we feel so guilty inside, we start regretting, repenting, even crying and suppressing the self. This is like killing one's own soul. Because every soul is a free soul. We love freedom. We all love freedom. We don't like bondage. But I'm binding myself in my own dealings, my own wrong actions, because whatever wrong I do, I only know, and God knows. Nobody else may know. You know, I may hide my wrong actions. Well, this again is the weakness of people. If they do something good, they want to expose that. I did this, I did that, I did that. But if they do something wrong, they tell everyone, please don't tell anyone. Please don't tell anyone. Because they don't want the wrong things to be exposed. They don't want it. And if any wrong is known, it's exposed like wildfire. So they don't want it to be exposed. But let me tell you again. This again is a law of karma. If we do something wrong and we tell the truth, I did this wrong, I'm very sorry, if we become so light, so free, because we have spoken the truth, now it's up to them what punishment to give or whatever it is. I have spoken the truth, I'm ready to face the truth or to face the facts or face the result. But if I try hiding it, you know, try to hide it, this will keep on increasing because I've hidden it and nobody knows, and I'll be committing it more and more and more and more. And the result will be one day when it is exposed, it is too late. Because I've already become a part of that. It has become my habit. And let me tell you, those habits, they are not formed in one day. They have been because of repeated actions. Somebody smokes once and he may say, oh, I spoke only once. But that one action can lead to another action, another twice, thrice, 10 times. How do chain smokers, you know, become chain smokers? They were not born smokers. But why do they become chain smokers? Maybe one smoke only at once. But then if somebody saw you smoking maybe once in a year, what will he call you? Oh, he smokes. Huh? You will say, no, I smoke only once a year. But the one who saw you only once a year, he will say, yes, I saw him smoking. So you can't deny it, no? And therefore, habit is not formed in one day. Habit comes from the thoughts. That's why the beautiful saying, watch your thoughts, for they become words. Whatever thoughts I'm creating in my mind, let me not say I'm too clever that whatever I think I never say. One day they will come into words. And watch your words, for they become actions. There are some people who say, I say many things but I don't do. I say many things but I don't do. But be careful, whatever you say, one day you'll surely do it. Therefore, what you don't want to do, don't say it. And what you don't want to say, don't think it. So simple. So watch your thoughts, for they become words. Watch your words, for they become actions. But it's not finished here. Watch your actions, for they will become your habits. And habits die hard. So watch your habits, for they will become your personality, your character. And watch your character, for that will form your destiny. It will definitely lead to your destiny. So it starts with the thoughts. And therefore we say it's not just the actions which are the seed, but before the actions, the thoughts are the seed. Therefore I have to ask myself, how are my seeds of thoughts? Because that will lead to my destiny, my future. Sometimes we say, I dash your life. Life dash I. I will lead to your life, or thoughts will lead to your life, and life will lead to your thoughts. So how do I want my life to be? It depends on what thoughts I create in the mind. So in this way, how many sinful actions I'm committing? So if I do something wrong, say it and be relieved. And do make a promise to not repeat that action. Instead of trying to suppress it or trying to feel guilty within and trying not to expose it, not to say it out. Because at least if you say out, it's finished once and for all. Never mind little punishment you will get, doesn't matter. But it's in the later or longer time, it won't lead to a bigger punishment. And if you do something good, no need to repeat, no need to say it, no need. Why no need? We have a very beautiful saying, you know, in Hindi we say, neki kar darya mein dal. Do something good and throw it in the sea. Don't describe it. Neki kar darya is a Persian word. It's also in Hindi we say darya. Throw it into the sea, throw it into the ocean. Don't repeat, don't think, I did this good, don't think. But this used to be said in the earlier days, when a lot of goodness used to be done. So people used to say, throw it in the sea, because lots of goodness, therefore sea was the place where they could throw, because it's very large. Then later on, this saying became different. The saying used to be, do something good and throw it into the river, no more sea. Then afterwards it changed further. Do good and throw in the well. Neki kar kuwe mein dal. Throw it in the well. Then this saying changed again, because sayings change according to the time. And the saying changed and it became, do something good and throw it in a pit. You know, khadda. Throw it in a pit. And you know what they say nowadays? Do something good and put it in the pocket. Put in the pocket means whatever commission you get, okay, you get it in your pocket. You become his master. It's for your gain. So self-interest. You do good only for self-interest. This is things happening today. But if you are doing something good, it is for the good of others. And the return will come automatically. A charitable act is a great act. And how the return will come automatically? Because the happiness you draw out of it really is the return. The blessings you receive from others, that's a beautiful return. What other return you want? Somebody may say, I did so much for this person and this person did not even say thank you to me. Why do you want the thank you? You do the good and forget about it. The return you will surely get. You know, it's very interesting. We do such good things for somebody, maybe. But okay, we receive some thanks sometimes. But then, once if you don't do something good for that person, then you see, he will never forget it. All the good things you did for that person, he'll forget. But one not good thing you did, that will be remembered again and again. This is the nature of people today. But then, I should not stop doing good because he does not think that he is seeing the bad thing of me, in spite of me having done so much good for him. Doesn't matter. So what is a charitable action? What is a sinful action? I have to understand. So, a sinful action means any action committed under the influence of body consciousness is a sinful action. Because that body consciousness will lead to all the vices. Lust, anger, greed, attachment, ego, prejudice, hatred, jealousy, whatnot. It's a long queue, long list. And all this will be included in sinful actions. And the result is sorrow. Sometimes the sorrow may not be immediate. But the ultimate result will be sorrow. Because all actions are also not alike. Supposing I have only an impure thought about somebody. Because of my ego, I have a bad thought about somebody. Well, and then I say, no, I should not think like that. So I'm nipping it in the bud immediately. So that wrong thought which came, it gave a little bit of sorrow, but then it's cleansed again because it was only temporary. But if I bring into words, I bring into actions, I bring it even further, then ultimately what will happen? It will result in such a big action. So the result will definitely be very strong, very adverse. It's just like picking, you know, raising my finger is also an action. It's an action. But then when I'm raising my finger and I'm just drawing a line against the wind, whatever, or the air, you know, air is here. It will not be visible because that line which I have drawn in the air will not be visible as a... The air is not visible. But then if I take the same finger and put a line on water, the line will be visible for 1 second at least. And then of course it will finish. It will stay for a second. Now I take the same finger and I just make a line on sand. I go on near the sea and make a line on sand. You know, we draw lines with our fingers on us on sand. Now that line will remain for at least a few minutes. But if I take a sharp pointed needle or a sharp pointer or anything sharp and I draw a hard line on stone, what will happen? Action is the same, just drawing a line. But what will be the difference? Writing on stone, this will become a permanent thing. So some thoughts, okay, words, actions, but then my feelings are very good. Maybe I spoke harshly because of my sanskar, okay, but then I regret later on, so it can be deleted, erased very easily. But then if it is so strong that my body consciousness led me to anger and that anger led me to killing someone, you know what will be the result? What will be the result? If I kill someone and I have no right to kill, I will get life imprisonment or I will be hanged. This is the punishment because it's life for life. If I have taken someone's life, I will have to give my life too. This is the punishment. Therefore, I have to check my karma that any action committed under the influence of vice, any vice, will lead to a sinful action and the result will be accordingly, depending how intense it is. Supposing I'm having bad thoughts about someone and I just speak out angrily. But if I regret later on and I do say sorry, definitely I will not be punished later on. But if I don't, my ego increases, then one day when I fall from that ego, I'll ruin myself. There's a very beautiful saying on this. In Hindi we have very good sayings. You know, a palm tree, we have many palm trees in Mount Abu, and there are dates on this palm tree. In the Middle East, so many dates, palm trees with very juicy dates. So for a date, a palm tree, there's a very beautiful saying, two sayings, both are opposite each other. One saying is, Bada hua to kya hua jaise lambi khajur. A palm tree, how tall it is. So what if you are very tall, very high, but what use is a palm tree? If it's very difficult for anybody to climb up and get those days, not all can climb up that tree. So a palm tree, even if it has beautiful fruits, but what use is it? Because nobody is going to climb up, and also it cannot give shade to any traveler. So what's the use of that palm tree if it cannot give shade to anyone or cannot give its fruit to anyone? So if an egoistic person, he may have so many good qualities, but if he is not able to share that with others, not able to help others, not able to give that to others, what use is that? It's like having all the fruit and you are not eating it. You know, you have the fruit but you're not eating it. And if you're not eating it, not sharing with anyone, that will finish. So if my present, whatever I am, is because of my past. So if I have a good understanding, good brain, good health, lots of wealth, is definitely my good karma. And in the past I have done some good karma which has resulted in great good attainments at this time. But what I have now, if I don't use it, I don't make use of it, I don't help others with it, this will finish very quickly, very easily. This is the law of karma. Because I had the fruit but I didn't eat it and I did not give to anybody else. If I have wealth but I'm not using that wealth for a worthwhile cause, I'm not helping anyone, that wealth will finish one day, because when I die, nothing will be with me. My children will fight over my wealth, and maybe sometimes, you know, the wealth doesn't go to the children also, because the will is not written properly, it goes to the government, finished.
Yeah.
And that person worked so hard to earn that wealth, but the earning was not in a good way, and the result was even his children will not be able to take the happiness of that wealth after he dies. This is the law of karma. And therefore, sinful action and charitable action, how much different they are. Any action done under the influence of any vice will turn into a sinful action. And the result of that will be, it will affect our health, it will affect our wealth, it will affect our relationships, it will affect our thoughts, it will affect everything. But a charitable action is completely opposite to that. A charitable action is any action done under the influence of soul consciousness. I am a soul. I see you also as a soul. All are souls. And we break all the barriers, as we see here, all the barriers of religion, caste, creed, color, culture, nationality, all are broken. Why? Because we see each other as a soul and children of one Father. We're all brothers. So with this feeling, when we are looking at each other, all our thoughts, words, actions will become charitable actions. Because I see myself as a soul, I see you as a soul, and my vision becomes pure because I see you not just as a soul, but as a pure soul, as a peaceful soul, as a loving soul. And I am also a peaceful and loving soul. So when I see you with that consciousness, the barriers are broken. And when I see you as a child of the Supreme, I am also the child of the Supreme, there is so much love for one another. But in the world today, all these barriers are there. This is why more and more sinful actions are being committed. and more sins are coming on our head in the form of a burden. So charitable action means every action done with that consciousness of the soul and the child of the Supreme, and the thought of sharing what I have with others. Because I brought nothing, I take nothing with me. My only good karma or bad karma, whatever I do, will accompany the soul, nothing else. So if physical things are not going to accompany me, then why not whatever I have, let me share with all. And when I'm sharing with all, definitely the blessings I receive, I do not want anything else. I don't want money from you. I don't want your belongings. I don't want anything. Just your blessings. You know, some people, they come and say, when I ask them, you want anything? No, sister, just your blessings. Because blessings are much more important than anything else in the world. We ask for blessings from seniors, from God, from saintly persons, blessings. Because blessings will be really our, credit with us, which we can take with us, which we will have with us when we go in front of God. Because only that will accompany us. There's a saying that every human being has three friends. I finish off with one story. Every human being has three friends. Similarly, there's a story that one person, he had a case against him and he needed a witness. So he was looking for people who could be his witness, but nobody was accepting. His nearest friend, whom he thought would help him, that one deceived him first. He said, "Sorry, brother, I know you are my friend, but then these matters of court, I don't believe in. I will never go to a court, and therefore please don't tell me to be your witness." Okay, his best friend deceived him. Then he went to his next friend, who was not very best, but not bad also. He used to be a good friend of his. And he went to him, he said, "Well, I can help you. I will just come to the gate of the court and help you to speak up. But I won't stand in the witness box and speak for you. I can't do that." So he deceived him. Then the third friend, who was very remote friend, very rarely used to meet him, but a little friend. So when he asked him, he said, "Yes, why not? I will definitely be your friend and I'll be your witness too." So in life we have three friends. One friend is this physical body and the possessions which we accumulate, mine, this body also mine. They will deceive us first. They won't bear witness in front of God. And whole life we have been doing only for the body, hardly for the soul. And all for the worldly things only. And the second friend, our relatives, who may be very close to us, but they will also deceive us. How? They will take the dead body to the cremation ground or to the cemetery, wherever, bury the body or cremate the body and bid goodbye. That's all. What else can they do? So they come to the door of the court, but not as a witness in front of God. But who is the third friend? Whom we hardly think of, but that one will be the true witness. What is that? You are the soul yourself. So who will be your witness? Your karma. Your karma. Whatever actions you did in life, they will be your witness. So God is not going to check how many houses you had, how many cars you had, how much bank balance you had, how many children you had. God's not going to see all that. But what will be in your witness? What good or bad karma you did. So what should we check on? Check what good or bad actions we do. And always think how to get blessings of people. Because they will be our witness and not any physical possessions. And once we have understood that, we can really understand the law of karma, the law of sow and reap, the law of action and reaction. If my health is good today, let me make good use of this good health to help others. If I have wealth today, let me help others with this wealth. We say 80% of the people in the world are not having much, and 20% are having the 80% resources of the world. So 20% having 80% resources and 80% having only 20% resources. And the world is meant for everyone. And therefore, we have to help, we have to share. But then, again, a charitable act is not that you ask for anything. You know, people come here, they say, you don't ask for money, you don't ask for any fees. So what are your charges here? How much do you charge? You go to any hotel, they charge you. Here at the end of the day, end of this retreat, after 5 days, we won't give you a bill. Please, this much money you have to pay. Why? Because you have come to your father's home. So in your father's home, your father is not going to take a bill, give you a bill and ask money from you. We have a saying, it's better to die than to ask. Better to die than to ask. The one who does it on his own is an angel, is a deity. The one who does an asking is a human being. And the one who does not even do an asking is a devil. That's what it is said. So this is God's home. So people, when they ask us, what do we have to give? We say, well, each one is a master. We have a contribution box, okay, you can put in that, each one's own capacity. But what we really ask for is 5 false coins. Are you ready to give that? Are you ready to give the false 5 coins? Which are those false 5 coins? The vices. Lust, anger, greed, attachment, ego. And then the children, they accompany them. There are many children, these vices. So this is in God's home. You go to any pilgrimage place, you do some charity, some donation. So we say, give your vices here. And go from here as a peaceful, loving, pure soul. So when we have when we go to God, we face God, with the righteous actions, the good actions, and we will salute the Supreme. God will also salute us, because we will go with respect. So as you have come to God's home, this is what we learn here, this is what we understand here, this is what we experience here, and in this way, change the self. Om Shanti. I don't know if you have any questions. You have a question? Yes? Karma of father and mother? Well, if their karma of father and mother, because if you are born there, definitely you have karma with that soul. Yeah. Mother and father also are souls. So you do have karma with them.
I have 3 examples to ask you. I is always associated, as an ego. Okay? My 3 examples are, if I say with, pride that I want to help a poor person, I agree that is wrong. Okay? I'm associating with pride.
No. Let me tell you 1 minute. You have, one is the I which you say with ego. But the other I is also that the I you say with soul conscious. Even that is I. And therefore we say, renounce the I of ego and accept the I of soul consciousness. If you like to say I, say I. Not that you don't have to say I. But then say it in a soul conscious state.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to say my, say my. But then say my as Shiv Baba, the Supreme Father is mine. The virtues are mine. They are mine. Because they will accompany the soul. So whatever will accompany me, that is mine.
Okay. Because yeah. We use often in the day-to-day life.
Yeah.
If I say, I have broken this chair and I'm sorry about it, ego is not associated with it.
Definitely
it's a humbleness.
Not, definitely not. Yeah.
So I want
so
to understand
the difference. That's what I said. I with ego, I with body consciousness is definitely leading to ego. And I with soul consciousness is leading to a charitable action. So we have to understand these two I's. I with ego will result in insult, feeling of insult and sorrow. But I in soul consciousness will lead to peaceful state of mind. So that is there. Okay?
Thank you, Shilu Ben.